Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, basement dwellers. Patrick O'Dowd here with David Ongar, the lawyer, welcoming you into a special little segment from this past week's Bandwagon Nerds number 100, hashtag BWN100, where we interviewed Omar Spahi. We wanted to take a little bit of time and put that interview back out for everyone to have a chance to listen to without necessarily needing to listen to all 2 hours or all 3 hours of the program. Because Dave, and I know you'll back this up, we were very proud of that interview and felt like it went really, really well and was a real highlight for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great interview. One of the best ones, if not the best one that we've ever done. And we do recognize that it was the main event, so it came on at the end of BWN 100. And yeah, I mean, I imagine some people may not have wanted to stick around for 2 hours and 15 minutes to get to it. But I think that releasing it separately, like you're alluding to, makes a lot of sense, especially for Omar's fans who are like, I don't care about What If or Doom Patrol. I just want to hear what Omar has to say.
Absolutely. And Omar had a lot to say. We cover everything from the genesis of his career to projects he's working on now. Yes, I even asked him about, you know, Rise of Skywalker and The Last Jedi, much to my immediate regret. But it was a very broad reaching interview. And this guy, you know, just kind of to talk about him a little bit more, such a young guy to already have done so much, whether it's his podcasting, to be an executive producer, to, you know, being a writer and everything in between. He really was gracious with his time, and it didn't feel like there was anything that was really off limits. And he was so great.
He was, and he even agreed with you on some of the stuff from Rise of Skywalker, so it wasn't a total loss. He agreed Palpatine coming out of nowhere didn't make sense, but, you know, at the same time, he did note parts of Last Jedi that most of us, including you, had some issues with. So it was a very fair, even-minded interview. But yeah, he's done so much at such an early age, and, you know, just listening to him talk about you know, just so many things about writing comics, about animation's place, growing place in the industry, about the MCU, what it means to him, about DC and where, you know, some stuff that he might not be happy with about that. There's so much in this interview that was just excellent. I think anybody who is, you know, interested in pop culture, nerd culture, is going to find some aspect of this interview that they will enjoy greatly.
Absolutely. And without further ado, we are going to hand that over to the man himself, the interview that Dave and I did with Omar Spahi for Bandwagon Nerds episode 100. I hope everyone enjoys it, and we will catch you next Monday for Bandwagon Nerds 101. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. It is time for the main event of episode number 100 of the Bandwagon Nerds podcast. We have on episode 100 a very, very, very special guest. We are thrilled to have him here for the 100th episode of the show. Omar Spahi, who is a content creator, comics writer, podcaster, upstanding citizen, you name it, he's done it all, folks. Omar, how are you doing here today?
I'm super excited. Congratulations to you guys for making it to 100 episodes. That's insane. You guys, I'm honored to be here, and I'm excited for you guys. That's quite the journey.
Yeah, I think Patrick would have lost some money on this 100 episode bet.
I did not think we were going to make it. I was not sure. And if you ever go back and listen to our archives, it's touch and go. Early, it was really touch and go. But I think we did a great job finding our niche and what we wanted to do. And yeah, I'm excited, Omar, as I was just looking through your career so far and following along with your podcast and seeing just who you've had the opportunity to interview. I couldn't be happier to have you on this show. I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Thanks. It's the feeling's mutual. Excited to be here and excited to talk comics, movies, everything in between.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, we have to start everything. I mean, every good story has an origin story. So I think we should just start off there with you, Omar. How did you get into comics and just this industry that you have, you know, prospered in, comics and all the content you've created? But you obviously started with a love of comics somewhere. So how did that take hold?
So, you know, it goes back to the way beginning. My mom would go to Barnes and Nobles and pick up books. I don't even think it was Barnes and Nobles. I forget what the name of the store was. It was Borders. Borders was just aging me a little bit. Borders, and I wanted to get a comic book there one time, and my mom said no. And so the store clerk was like, the kid's reading. You should buy it for him. And she goes, okay. And as a kid, I picked up one issue of The Flash, and I reread that cover to cover probably 20 times. And as a kid, you have to wait 30 days for the next comic to come out. So I went back to Borders, and 30 days as a kid feels like forever. So you get there and finally get the next issue, and it's, you know, 167, 168. And, you know, I wait another month, get the third issue. And I, all of a sudden during this process, I start to really get into it, pick up other series, pick up, you know, Green Lantern, pick up Batman. And from there, I start learning about comic book stores. And that's where I got introduced to Heidi Hill Comics in Santa Monica.
I'm feeling a DC vibe here, Patrick. I know that's going to thrill you.
It was so funny because I was listening to the Fred Gogol episode that you just put out on your podcast, Omar. And he was talking about Marvel and Spider-Man and it's kind of like DC and Marvel and how they have like license to just sort of like know that the content they put out is what people are going to purchase. I was a Spider-Man kid, and I was one of those consumers for a really long time that if it had Spider-Man on the cover in any way, shape, or form and name, I was going to pick it up. And I tell this story all the time. Dave, do you remember what the very first comic that my grandmother bought me at a grocery store back in 1984
Yes, was? She wisely decided to get you Kraven's Last Hunt as your very first introduction to the industry. Yeah.
The final issue where Kraven finishes himself off, no less. And that was the first comic book I remember that was purchased for me. And it was crazy because my parents, and I think you can speak to this, they were very much like, this is kid stuff. And that book by itself opened my eyes up to a world of not only is this something that can be exciting and fun, but that it can also tell heavy stories too. And that was the beginning. So, but yeah, I'm a Marvel guy all the way. I'm a Marvel guy too.
I mean, if anything, the movies and everything have made me love Marvel so much more. And growing up, I still read Kraven's Last Hunt. I still read the you know, Masterworks for Stan Lee. You know, I had the honor of having lunch with Stan Lee one-on-one. So that was really cool.
I'm so jealous of that. I'm jealous. That's amazing. That's outstanding.
I was 23 years old, and we had the same attorney. So he set up the lunch. He was there with us. So it wasn't one-on-one. We had him, Gil, my attorney, and me. And Stan's going on and on about all the projects he has post-Marvel and everything. You know, Stan Lee's Magnificent Seven and this and that. And I have all my comic books I'm working on. And he goes, hey, what are we working on together? And I was a 22-year-old kid, and I was like, I don't know. I'll think about it. Let's figure it out. And nothing came of it. But it was like, you know, something that I get to live with and cherish forever. You know, for me, he's a big reason I do what I do is because of what Stan did and the journey he's taken. And, you know, even we had lunch, probably he was 91, 92. And in his later years, we're out at the restaurant. And I remember I go to order, and I'm, you know, a young kid, just barely 21. I was like, I'm having lunch with 9-year-olds. I'll have a Coke. Stanley goes, I'll have a screwdriver. He'll have a screwdriver. He'll have a screwdriver. And at 91, Stan still has this zest for life that just reminded me to always be yourself and, you know, don't apologize. Even at 91, he showed his personality just with a drink order.
So you mentioned writing. What prompted you to take that plunge and take that risk to really put yourself out there and get started as a writer? Because you have a profile on Image Comics. Like, look you up. There you are. I can see, you know, getting it together is right here in front of me. And like your whole podcast, a lot of what I read is, you know, talking to other artists about the process of building a comic, right? You know, writing. What was your process? How did you, what prompted you to take the plunge, and how did that work for you?
You know, I didn't even know people made comic books. I was so naive. I just loved comic books, and I was like, they just appear magically. And so I was at the counter in Marina Del Rey, and they had a friend of mine who was there, who was a waiter there. He started talking to me about this creator and that creator and this creator. And I was like, wait, you care about the creators? Wait, people make these? And from then on, I was like, oh, I can make something too. And from that point on, it was just this fire that started like in my soul. And I just went home that night and wrote a full 22-page script. I outlined it. And I just, you know, carved it out, and, you know, I've been doing it ever since.
That's great. I mean, that's an amazing story as to how it all comes together. You've got a lot of things going on all the time, it seems, looking at your profile and looking at Twitter and your social media. But what do you have going on currently? Like, what's in the hopper for Omar Spahi? What can we expect down the pike? Not to give away anything super secretive, but just kind of curious what we can expect from you in the upcoming weeks, months.
Yeah. So, I mean, jumping on a plane to France after tomorrow. And all of a sudden we're going to be going to MIPCOM, which is one of the biggest animation and film festivals in the world, to sell animated content. So I've been fortunate enough to be on Code 8, which was the number one movie on Netflix. And we're going to MIPCOM in order to start to understand how, you know, I think we all have dreams of making shows and making movies, but this is really the marketplace where things come together, is MIPCOM and Kidscreen in the kid space. Those are the main two, and Annecy's up there as well. But there's just very few places you can go to get something made. I've always, for the past, I don't want to say 20 years, but it's pretty close to 20 years. It's been 13, 14 years that I've been at New York Comic Con. And this is the first year that I'm not going to New York Comic Con. I'm going to MIPCOM instead, because it's my career path and my trajectory. I want to change from being just the comic book guy to really focus on animation. And that's the journey. And I'm really excited because it's been quite an adventure so far.
Now you mentioned Code 8, which you were the executive producer. At least that's the credit I see next to your name, which sounds like the guy who does everything. and had the privilege to work with not one, but two MLs. Both Robbie and Steven are stars in that. But based on what you said there, are you saying that there's going to be something coming from Code 8 that you're going to be turning into, or that you're looking to turn into a series, or am I reading too much into that?
So Code 8, the sequel's already been announced. They're filming it right now, just in about a month or so. They're going to get started on that. They're heavy in prep right now. And then for my goal is to really, you know, I just had a daughter recently during the pandemic.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And my goal is to make kids content. I love kids content all the way from pre-K all the way to 6 to 11. That's really where I think my calling is. So I'm transitioning from just because I love the creative process. I love making comic books. It's like if I could just do that every day, I would do that. And I love the process of making animation and making shows and talking about little details and figuring stuff out where other people, it drives them crazy. For me, it ignites this fire. And I love to talk about what hair it is and why the hair should be pink instead of red or whatever the little details are. You know, to me, that gets me excited and really gives me a lot of passion about what I do.
You talk about animation, so I wanted to ask you, animation seems to be really kind of carving out a much larger footprint lately than it has been in the past. You look at series like What If, DC's animation has been phenomenal for over a decade now, and you're heavily involved with that. How do you see the industry evolving as far as animation is concerned and where it can create maybe even a larger audience or reach a larger audience?
I mean, I'm astounded with how much animation I watch as an adult, and I know so many people around me who watch animation, and there's just such great content, and people want good stories, regardless of if it's animated or not. Kids, more on the other hand, only want animated content for the most part. Like there's a lot of like, you know, kids shows that at a certain age they go, listen, if it's not a cartoon, I'm not watching it. But for me, like it's been a journey to figure out how to create animation because it can be rather expensive. It can be rather laborsome. You have so many details, so many moving parts. And you know, it's just about assembling that team and figuring out, hey, who's writing this one? Am I writing this one? Is someone else writing this one? What's the greater concept? Okay. Who's the production team? Where are we recording the audio? You know, let's go through the looks. Who are our partners? Making sure, because most stuff doesn't come out of a vacuum. It's not one person's vision going, hey, listen, we're going to do this show. Let's go. It's usually a lot of different countries coming in and doing co-productions and, you know, going, hey, listen, we have to make sure that we hit this note and that note, because in our culture, that's really important. So it's about being collaborative, being open and making sure to, you know, pick your battles very carefully and know which ones you're willing to put your foot down, and other ones you have to, you know, say, hey, listen, you guys are right. Let's do it your way.
Yeah, I sit there. You were talking about content for your daughter, and I'm thinking about my son. He's 9 years old. And by the way, big Flash fan. And so I don't know where I went wrong there, but
he went right. That's good. So Flash is one of my all time favorites.
And I think that's just a character that it does speak to people on a lot of levels. One of our other hosts on the show, PC Tunney, he talks about how it's like this beautiful embodiment of love and that he's just terrific. But you talked about sort of building a series and, you know, all these different angles. What you've worked on Big Ten before as a writer, or Ben 10, not Big Ten, Ben 10 before previously as a writer, you worked on Sonic Prime. When trying to like pull that content, how does that creative process work to find like that message is going to resonate with children? Like where does that well come from?
You know, I think number one, it's, you know, for both those shows, there were writer's rooms and we talked about it. And it's through this collaborative process, we've worked with the amazing people at Man of Action and they're amazing at what they do. And so from there, it's that collaborative process of going, hey, how about this? How about that? And usually, you know, Man of Action has done this over like a million times at this point. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but probably not by much. And so they go, great, this is what this episode is. Let's go and do it. And they kind of go and they say, hey, this is what it is. You do, you know, there's a process to writing. So usually it's can be anywhere from idea to outline or beat sheet to, you know, after an outline, you do first draft, second draft, polish and revisions along the way. So it's a big process to go step by step for everything. And, you know, you just have to go, okay, I'm playing with someone else's toys, so to speak, if it's Ben 10 or whatnot. And you have to be really respectful and say, hey, listen, there's lines that you might have really fun ideas, but they can't cross. And the same is true with Marvel and DC. You know, having, you know, Cena goes firsthand. He's like, hey, Marvel won't let me do what I want to do with this, that, and the other. But that's kind of the creative process. You have to be willing to just say, hey, cool, what can we do? What can't we do? And run with that.
You mentioned earlier how the MCU kind of opened your eye. Well, I mean, I'm sure you already were a Marvel fan, but it made you a bigger Marvel fan. And DC's kind of doing their own thing. But I kind of want to ask you a general question about the comics industry as a whole, because you're obviously heavily involved with that. How have you seen the industry evolve since the MCU basically caught fire? Because I know before the MCU came out, the comics industry was in a bit of trouble. It has seemed to have a resurgence over the years that kind of is paralleling what's going on with the movies. How do you see the industry as far as the stability of the industry right now? And where do you see things going in the next few years?
Honestly, I feel like it's a very difficult question for me, because I'm so enamored with comics, and you know, I feel like my opinion is heavily biased, because since you can go back to you know, the 70s and look at the Superman movie, you can go back and really start that as really the beginning. You can see when Stan and Avi sold the rights to Spider-Man and the X-Men to create the animated shows. All of that has played into the building of these franchises, building these characters in meaningful ways. And now you're seeing it even more with shows like Sweet Tooth, Why the Last Man, Watchmen. You've seen so many of these shows come from comic books. And I think that more and more of our content is coming from comic books. So I do believe that comic books are here to stay. I know the numbers have been through the pandemic. They've gone up and through the roof for so many creators and so many publishers. I'm very close with a lot of publishers. And I think that it's the place to go for premium content before it gets turned into a TV or movie. You know, people always go, I have a screenplay, I'm going to do a comic book. But it's, you have to kind of do a comic book because you want to do a comic book and then see if it has the trajectory to make it.
You talked about how well the industry is doing, particularly with the pandemic. How have you seen the ad? Because I know Dave is a million years older than me. You talked about picking up comic books, you know, at the brick and mortar stores. I've always loved like getting my comics, the plastic bags. How has digital media impacted the industry in your view, just in terms of, like, you know, we've got Comixology now, Amazon, I think works through Comixology as well. And just, there's all these other like sort of medias. Do you see the end of print comics coming?
You know, I just asked this question on Twitter the other day, and I said, how do you read comics digitally or in print? And I probably had 300-400 responses. And from that, I want to say it's 50-50. Half the people are print only, no way, digital all the way, forget about print. So print is very much alive and well. There's still a lot of demand for print, but digital is still a factor too. And I think that there's people out there who want to read digitally, and they're going to find a way to read it digitally, whether it's Comixology or on whatever app they have or whatnot. But I think, you know, there's people who, you know, back Kickstarters and only want the digital option, because there's a lot of people who, listen, if you're a comic book collector, you know this. Space is limited in houses. You can have a whole room dedicated to comics, and you feel like that whole room, comic boxes aren't pretty to look at. They're like, yeah, the stuff, the artwork in the comics is gorgeous. But like when you get to the other stuff, it can become a burden. So I think print is definitely here to stay. And I think the value of comics are here to stay. But I think digital is also very much alive and well as well.
To kind of tag on to what you and Patrick are talking about with this, the industry has just exploded during the pandemic, and obviously people have more downtime and were locked down and had to read a lot more. But you also talked about all these streaming shows that have been comic centric, basically, and they've been doing it remarkably well. You look at shows like The Boys, Umbrella Academy, Lock and Key, you know, The Witcher, which is kind of more video game based, but you know, people have been interested in this stuff for decades. Why do you think it has caught fire over like the last 5, 6, 10 years, where, you know, like this show, where a show like this, which is based on nerd culture, can prosper? Why do you think that it has become in the forefront, that everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, and get this content out there that is based on some of these remarkable stories?
You know, I think people want to invest in success. You always want to take something that you know and you love, and if you're going to translate it or champion that project, you want to know and love the source material. And I think you know, when you add that visual element to comics, I think it makes it so much stronger for people. People really connect with the emotions of the character because you can read their expressions. So there's that face language. There's that language you only get by being on a face-to-face, where you can see what that process is. And I think that's really powerful to create it. I think the future, I think in anything, to create an IP is incredibly challenging. But once you have that IP, to service that IP and continue to have it grow is also incredibly challenging. You know, it's not Steamboat Willie came out for Disney, and that was their first comic book and or that first their first animation. And they serviced the mouse for generations so they can continuously use him and reinvent him and make him better. And that's what the journey is.
So I'm going to shift gears almost entirely here and ask a question. We know that there's a lot of projects and things that are coming up out there, you know, whether it be streaming series that are debuting. What is one upcoming project that somebody else is producing that you're excited to see on a screen?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that someone else is producing, because that kind of narrows it down for me a little bit.
Right. I mean, yeah.
There's so much that is coming out right now that I'm just like beyond excited for. You know, I have friends who are working on Doom Patrol, What If, and they've done Doom Patrol has been phenomenal. What If has been phenomenal, you know, and I think I'm excited to see more of that, to see the expanded version of those and see how they continue to grow. Like, there is so much that I'm a fan of right now. And I feel really, in a weird way, super blessed, because I don't feel like I'm craving content at all. Like, I feel like I have old content. If I want to go back and watch old Star Trek that I have never seen, Deep Space Nine, you know, I just finished The Next Generation. So I always have old content to go back to, but I still have always new content with What If, Walking Dead, you name it, and you still have so much great stuff to follow up on and follow into.
I love that you mentioned Doom Patrol and What If, both shows that we review on this podcast
every week
as part of our weekly rundown. So perfect timing and perfect selections.
And I'm glad you mentioned Doom Patrol, because you know, you've worked at Image, so I want to ask you about an Image property and see if you think that this one will ever be brought to streaming or something like that. I'm a huge fan of Saga, which makes Doom Patrol look relatively tame as far as insanity goes. Do you ever see them a chance that they might bring that to a streaming platform?
1,000%. It's coming. I'm telling you, it's such a big hit in the comic book space that there's no way that it doesn't go. And I don't know if Brian and Fiona own the rights right now, or if they've optioned them, or what the situation is. But look at Why the Last Man. Why the Last Man came out, you know, I want to say in the early 2000s, is that right? And
yes.
It's taken 20 years for the show to come out on FX. We've heard casting rumors for a long time. Same with 100 Bullets. We've heard so much that's come out with it. But Why the Last Man is actually here. It's taken 20 years, and it's freaking awesome. And it's one of my favorite comic book series of all times. And to see it kind of come out is really, it's surreal for me, because it's so cool.
I just want to see Lion Cat. For real. I mean, I think I can see the Lion Cat plushies and stuff selling better than Grogu. I mean, it's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. And it's a huge franchise with Brian K. Vaughan is a genius. So he's going to do absolutely phenomenal with it. And who knows when that comes out, you know, Why the Last Man is also Brian K. Vaughan. So hopefully this shows a success and Saga will come out right after, you know, it's only a matter of time when people sense really successful comic books because of what The Walking Dead has done. People are willing to take that risk on it, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, or you name it. They're willing to throw the dice, you know, roll the dice at it, because they know they have an innate fan base. You know, you look at what Invincible has done. Invincible was phenomenal for being a show that's, you know, based on a comic book that was out 20 years ago. Same thing. It takes that long for stuff to come out. It's just kind of the nature of what we do. And the true fans are here for it, and they go, oh my God, this is amazing. And the people who are new to it, they learn it from that experience for the first time. And that's also so awesome. And hopefully it continues to grow and blossom into much cooler things.
You know what property I want to see get a second chance? Tank Girl. Girl had a movie with Lori Petty that is a cult classic, but I think could find a very nice home on a streaming service somewhere. And that's like my personal, like, God, I wish that would come back. I had a professor who was obsessed with that comic, made us all read it for a heroism class. And how it just challenged all these different sort of ideas of what a hero was. And yes, make that a series. Somebody, some streaming service, please pick this up.
I think everything that's old will become new again. And even it's about who champions the rights and who goes after them. You know, going to licensing conventions, I went to a licensing show with me and my partner this year. You realize that there's some amazing classics where the rights are available and you go, how did that get another TV show? Or how did you see that again? It's about people going after the rights. David Walker came on my show and talked about how he broke into comics. And he said, hey, I wanted to do a Shaft comic book. So I went out of my way to go find out who owns the rights to Shaft. And he went to the first people. They said, no, we don't want to talk to them. We talked to them. And finally, he got in front of the people who have the rights to Shaft. And that's how he was able to get his first break into comic story. And since then, it's just been one thing after another for him, and doing Bitterroot, which is awesome. But that's the process there is you have to go and knock on doors and see what's available and also see if you can get things like Tank Girl, because that's how stuff gets made. That's like the cool stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of your show, the podcast, why don't you talk about that for a minute? How did you get the idea for the podcast and the general gist of it as to what you're doing, where you're talking to many different creators about the process, like you mentioned earlier, the process of creating comics. So let people listening know about the show, where they can find it, and just the general idea of it.
Yeah, Dreamer Comics is something I came up with because I was curious to share the journey for other comic book creators. I really wanted to champion my friends, my other industry professionals, and really get them to tell their stories and what makes their comic book come out. What, you know, I wanted the no BS answers for, hey, what's going to make a comic book successful? What's your process like when it comes to creative? And there's so many people out there who I would go to New York Comic Con, I'd go to San Diego Comic Con, who would come and hand me their script, or would come and hand me their thing. Hey, this is a comic book I have. How do I make it? How do I do it? And it became inundated that I went, hey, there's actually a massive demand for this. People love comics, and people also don't know the process and they want to learn about it. And that's where the show kind of came from. And now we're staring on the barrel of 200 episodes. So it's really mind blowing. It's really, really humbling to see the journey the show has taken and, you know, to be able to interview everyone we've interviewed.
Dave, do you mind if I ask Omar the most important question that we ask everybody who comes on to Bandwagon Nerds?
Only if he's going to allow it.
You bet.
Well, first of all, Omar, I have to know, like, do you care for Star Wars? Are you a Star Wars fan?
Yeah, you know, I am a Star Wars fan. Don't get me wrong. I definitely have my qualms with some of them, but I am a huge Star Wars fan.
It is good that you mentioned qualms, sir. So, better film, The Rise of Skywalker or The Last Jedi?
You know, it's hard because The Rise of Skywalker to me had a lot of, it felt more like Star Wars. So if you're going purely from a feeling point, it felt like, you know, bringing in the holocrons on. I was a massive fan of the books growing up. Holocrons were only ever in books. You'd never seen it before on screen. And for me, that was a big yes moment. The weird love story between Rey and Kylo didn't feel right to me. The ending with Palpatine coming out of left field didn't feel right to me. But I do think tonally, feeling-wise, it felt better to me than The Last Jedi. The Last Jedi was really funny and charming, but it took away from the Star Wars feeling that I had before. So from that, like, I think, you know, Rian Johnson's an incredibly talented director, but I think, you know, I feel like I wasted 45 minutes of that movie following Finn accomplish nothing.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that to me was a big letdown. And I was like, this isn't a Star Wars movie. Like, there was no growth. It felt like there was a lot missing from both of them, honestly. So if I had to choose one, I'd probably go Rise of Skywalker.
My man. It's been a running debate for a year, Omar, over a year now, as to this thing. But you know, you mentioned Star Wars. Because we talk streaming shows and things like that. The Mandalorian. What are your thoughts on that series, especially the way season two ended with the whole Luke Skywalker's back, at least for a little while, moment of the year sort of thing?
It was amazing. I mean, being a fan of these franchises and these characters for so long, you're like, you want to, you crave that. You crave that connection to the other franchises, you know. And like, listen, if you are going to say in 20 years from now that the Mandalorian is going to appear in another franchise and have the same effect, I believe you. Some kids are going to grow up with Baby Yoda and the Mandalorian, and they're going to pop on screen and go, oh my God, I can't believe they used him. And Luke Skywalker was like our guy. He was our hero. He's the hero's archetype. He's Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey embodied. So I think it's so awesome to see him come back. And I think that whole show is, Jon Favreau is a genius. And I think that whole thing is executed immaculately.
I think this is kind of the last question for me as I think about this, but we talk a lot about fans and fandom. How do you see that now influencing a lot of these properties and sort of the creative directions for things? Like, and I think about this a lot with the Abrams Star Wars trilogy. And when he, like, one of the first advertisements that he did when we were getting ready for The Force Awakens was very much this, like, I'm a fan just like you, and very much showing this, like, respect and reverence for the original trilogy that a lot of folks didn't feel within those prequels. So I kind of go back and forth on that. I see a lot of attention and service to fans that I think is a little bit different than what I saw in like the 80s when a lot of these works were first being created.
Sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
So it's really about how has fandom and like these followings, like, and you see it with, like, you know, with Star Wars or with Harry Potter or heck, even Twilight, Marvel, DC, how do you see their reactions playing into some of these creative processes and these films that are being made now, and how I see them being stakeholders in these properties as much as any writer or director? And I was just kind of wanting to get your take on how fans have kind of evolved into being as much a part of filmmaking as the filmmakers.
It's really tough because I think nobody sets out to make something bad. No one ever goes out and goes, hey, listen, I'm going to tear this up. I'm going to destroy this franchise. No one ever does that. They want to champion something. They want to do it in the right way. And it, you know, there's so many different people involved through any production. So you have to have that one person who's going to say, this is whose story it is. You know, here's the protagonist, here's the journey for it. And the fans really are, they're the ones who decide if it's worth talking about and worth being about. You know, if you love something, you're going to champion it to your friends. You know, we see it's happening right now with Squid Game. We've seen it happen with Game of Thrones. We've seen it happen with Walking Dead. And the proof is in the fandom. If the fandom comes together, that's it. You have a franchise, you have a hit, and people respond to it and they love it. And if you're not able to connect with people, the word of mouth doesn't happen. It doesn't come together. It doesn't make something, it doesn't make an impact culturally. And if someone may really like it and someone may really love it, but you'll also have those people who don't like it and don't love it. And if you don't have that people coming together, the franchise is not going to be as strong as something else. So it's important always to service the fans and try to get something that's going to connect with people as much as possible.
Well, I know we could talk to you for another hour, but I know you got better things to do, or more important, I'll say more important things to do. So I want to close off asking you this, because we've discussed this on the show many, many times. And you mentioned the MCU earlier, and we've talked about DC. I just want to get your overall thoughts. How do you feel about the MCU, where it's going right now with this ever expanding universe that gets bigger every week? And then DC's approach has been a little bit different. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on the MCU and where DC is right now and how you're feeling about that.
Listen, I am a DC fanboy. I love DC. I can't watch the movies. They're really, you know, I feel like you're missing a lot of the souls of the characters and what they're doing. Like Superman, and you look at the original, like Man of Steel, he lets his dad die. You're like, you know, these characters are supposed to be these superheroes, and if you're Superman, you're not going to let your dad die to prove a point. Like, it's not, it just didn't sit well to me. They're trying to be something they're not, dark and brooding and this and that, and they're so far deep into it that the whole thing is just a mess to me now. The only way, in my eyes, they could, like, redeem this is they go, hey, listen, they were the crime syndicate all along. They're not Superman, Wonder Woman, but they're actually Ultraman, and they're all the evil versions of themselves, because it just seems like the characters, none of them particularly seem likable to me, with the exception of maybe Wonder Woman.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but with what you just said right there, do you see them going Flashpoint Paradox with the Flash movie to kind of try and do what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think they need to. I think it's hard because they, you look at it honestly and you go, hey, listen, is this going to be, we need a reset. We need a change of direction. Like, sure, Aquaman made $1 billion. Sure, Wonder Woman has its success, the first one and whatnot. But listen, it's, you need to have content that people are going to gravitate towards. And they have to start thinking about the kids. They have to start thinking about all ages content, not to be so violent and dark and brooding and, you know, focus on who the characters are. I feel like they lost a lot of the soul of the characters through these movies. Well, Marvel has hit it directly on. They have the right amount of seriousness. They have the right amount of tone. And, you know, Marvel has done a phenomenal job. If I was a kid growing up right now, I think we'd all agree that there's no better time to have content in for comic books. Like, it just doesn't exist. These movies have been exactly what any kid would imagine and hope for. And every single movie holds up to this day. I don't think there's a single movie where I was like, eh, you know, that one should be erased from continuity. There's not a single one where, and that's astounding. You look at DC and it's like 2 out of every 3 should be erased from continuity. And you look at Tom Cruise and had to try to do it with The Mummy, you know, and he said, hey, listen, we're going to take the Universal Monster series and do the same thing Marvel's doing. And the first one bombed. And it's not easy to make a good movie, but Marvel has the formula and they do it every single time, which is really, 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 really commendable. And that's, to me, the biggest thing is they've found a formula, they work with it and make it happen every single time.
Is it casting that they get right? Is it casting?
No, I really feel like it's storytelling. I really feel like that's it for me, because casting, you can cast the same person right 2 or 3 different times. The casting's super important too, but I think it's storytelling. At least for me, it's the storytelling. It's making sure that the formula works and making sure that you have this this journey following the 3-act structures that you can go and do with every single Marvel movie. And that's why they're all feel predictable. They all have their humor about them. They all have their seriousness about them, and they all work. So,
you know which DC movie to me hits those points that you talked about, and Dave knows exactly which movie I'm going to bring up. I love Shazam so much, because that movie was fun to watch and was every bit the superhero movie that I felt like a lot of those lighter Marvel flicks were. Like, everything you just described, that with Zachary Levy all the way through.
I love Shazam. Shazam was so much fun. I think they did a great job with Shazam, but you're like, it's so hard because you were like, oh great, they're going to bring in this universe and this character and that character. And I think they're, you know, in the comic books, the crossover, like you said, was so cool. When Spider-Man's going to be in a comic book, I would like be like, I'm going to pick that up. The Flash is in this issue of Superman. Why? Are they racing? Oh, who's going to win? Like, that part of it was so cool. But if you're dealing with crossovers and the other characters don't work, if Superman shows up at the lunch table at the end and you're like, oh, I don't like Superman, it kind of it gives you a different feeling than, oh my gosh, it's Captain America. Like, it's my friend, like, you know. So I think Shazam was fantastic, but I think the whole universe needs to be revised and fixed.
Yeah, I mean, and Patrick knows I'm like you, Omar. I'm predominantly, well, I wouldn't say predominantly, but, you know, maybe 55-45 DC versus Marvel. But I feel the same way you do. And I don't want to keep going on, but I'm just curious about this thought. Marvel really didn't have anything to compare to. Iron Man was a new IP, basic, or new property, for movies at least. Captain America tried to have been done, but not really. Batman and Superman, who are the cornerstones of DC, have been done and redone and done iconically. You know, Christopher Reeve's Superman, you're not going to top that. Michael Keaton's Batman, or even Christian Bale's, lots of stuff to really fail by comparison. Do you think that had something to do with DC's problems?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. I think Christian Bale's Batman was a huge success. It was phenomenal. They did a great job. They asked hard-hitting emotional questions, you know, about sanity, about fear, about, you know, you look into, you know, purpose. And they executed those so perfectly that DC was like, great, more of this. This is what works. People want to see more of this style. But Wonder Woman's not that type of character. Superman's not that type of character. That's Batman. And that worked for that Batman with the right visionary behind it. And it didn't work. It doesn't work for the whole line. It doesn't work for Justice League. Justice League, it should be a ray of hope. But it didn't feel like that. It felt like ragtag group of misfits. And I'm like, no, Justice League is God's coming together to save the world. So, you know, I think for me, I hope that they're able to just, you know, start anew and, you know, really look forward. The best part about DC right now is their TV shows have been fantastic and their animation has been bar none. So, so fun to watch. So fun. Every single one has been great. So they're doing a lot right. But in terms of their big scope, I'm worried that in the long run, people are still just there because their kids don't know what's bad and good. Like, they'll watch whatever and go, oh, cool, Batman. But adults are the tastemakers in that regard, and it's important to try to get it right. And I think DC has to go back to the drawing board, sadly.
Yeah, I love the crime syndicate idea. That would be awesome if they pulled that out of their hat. Hey, Omar, look, Patrick, you got anything else? I was going to let our friend go here.
No. I'm just so appreciative that you were able to give us a little bit of your time for this, for our 100th episode. It was so great to be able to pick your brain today to just get some insight from somebody who knows and has been a part of the industry and is just getting started really in the scope of your career. Like, there's just nothing but big things for you. And I'm honored. And I think Dave is too, that we were able to get you on the show and to talk to us today. So thank you very, very much.
The honor is all mine, guys. And congratulations seriously on 100 episodes. That's really something to look forward to. And I look forward to getting to 1,000 next. So,
yeah. And Omar, before we let you go, please let people know, where can they follow you as far as social media, for Twitter, for any of the projects you've got going on, for the podcast? Please share that with our listeners.
Yeah, if people want to check me on Twitter, I'm pretty easy. I'm at Omar Spahi. You can't miss me. I'm just me on Twitter, and I love interacting with people and try to, you know, stay around comic books and focus on nerd culture stuff.
Well, thank you so much, sir. We greatly appreciate you being our guest of honor here on episode 100. Wish you nothing but the best. Safe travels to Europe, and we will be talking to you very soon.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Patrick. Great being here.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.